Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Forward to an interview coming up in, just about 11 minutes from right now, but we got the news coming up at the top of the hour. I'm looking outside my window, the studio window. I have the studio window open today. Not open, but the curtain's open. I can see the palm trees swaying. Looks like we're about to get some more rain here in southwest Florida. Limbaugh brings his show to you from southeast Florida, but he doesn't often tell you what the weather's like now, does he? Maybe that's why he's got 20 million listeners, and I don't. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe you don't give a damn if the palm trees are swaying and all that. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be right back, so don't go away.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger may once again settle into the role of Terminator if a budget deal isn't signed by the state legislature by Thursday. Jesse Russell reports.
22,000 temporary workers could be facing the axe in California if a budget stalemate isn't broken by Thursday. That is just one of a number of threats being leveled against workers by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger as California Senate and Assembly Republicans and Democrats fail to reach a compromise on the state budget. On Tuesday, Schwarzenegger reiterated the threats he made last week that would also see the pay of 200,000 state workers reduced to the federal minimum of $6.55 per hour. The governor said on Monday that he will invoke his executive authority Thursday. His spokesperson, Aaron McLear, said the move is necessary to ensure the state has enough cash on hand to last until September. Meanwhile, State Controller John Chiang has said he will not follow through with the executive order and will make sure the 200,000 workers continue to be paid their full rate. Under the executive order, the workers would be rehired and the salaries retroactively paid in full as soon as the budget is passed.
After rallying thousands of workers at Verizon's New York City headquarters over the weekend, the CWA and IBEW are ready to strike Verizon this Saturday rather than accept concessions. Paul Feeney is with IBEW Local 2222.
The company wants to dig their heels in on certain things like health care benefits, and they demand concessions in pensions or in job security. Make no mistake about it. 70,000 members from Massachusetts to Virginia are going to strike this company on Saturday night.
CWA and the IBEW are using a united front bargaining approach with Verizon to maximize the power they have to represent Verizon workers' interests. A rally in Boston is planned for Thursday. Feeney says this hugely profitable company is in no position to be demanding concessions or trying to outsource jobs to cheaper labor markets.
You have a company that's making billions of dollars in revenue and millions of dollars in profits every year. We think that they certainly have an obligation to their local workforce, to the United States of America, and they have to do everything they can to keep the jobs here within our borders. It's an issue that's important to us. It's important to all workers. And again, we're prepared to strike over it next Saturday.
Here's today's economic report. The International Monetary Fund laid out a gloomy outlook for the future of the U.S. housing market. The organization said in a report on Monday that the bottom of the housing market is not visible. The organization predicts $1 trillion in losses for the housing market, mostly as a result of the subprime mortgage collapse. On an international scale, the fallout of the U.S. housing market is being felt overseas, as it has left investors wary about investing in emerging markets.
WIN's Labor News is now available right on your cell phone. Just dial 425-527-7001. Get your WIN Labor News on your cell phone at 425-527-7001. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in tonight. Midnight Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
I'm always wondering things, just like Andrew Rooney. Did you ever wonder why, have you wondered why that oil has dropped about, maybe 16% from its high just a few weeks ago? About 16%, and yes, gas has dropped less than 5%. Anybody know the answer to that? We'll be pausing for another break here in just 3 or 4 minutes to get our guest on the line. And also, I had a note of interest here. Rush Limbaugh, yes, sir, Rush Limbaugh is interested in buying the NFL's St. Louis Rams. According to the Associated Press, talk show host Rush Limbaugh has a hankering to become an NFL team owner and said if the St. Louis Rams come up for sale, he might be interested in buying them. The Cape Girardeau, Missouri native told KMOX Radio in St. Louis that NFL ownership is a billionaire's club, but said he's not part of that club but is in good financial shape. Limbaugh said any moves he makes would be a business decision and not based on his ties to the region. The worst thing that could happen is for a fan to buy the team. And when I say to people, they say, that's crazy. It would be fun. It's a billion-dollar business. The Rams owners have said the team is not for sale, but there's been speculation they could be swayed by the right offer. Longtime owner Georgia Fontanari died earlier this year, and her children are now the majority owners. Think about that. Think how interesting that could be. They could go through the crowd to, you know, hot dogs, Oxycontin. Maybe that's not fair. And also, Rush would have the opportunity to see all those naked guys in the locker room. I suppose he's weighed that all out. So maybe Limbaugh will end up owning a NFL franchise. He's certainly got the money to dig into something like that. And did you hear that during the news that the bottom of the housing market may not be visible? Ooh. Seeing how property values here have dropped maybe, 35-40% already over the last couple of years, that we haven't seen the bottom of it yet and that it's not even visible? That's not good news. I see, Las Vegas and Miami, maybe the top two. They've lost 28% since last year. And yet, I'm watching earlier on the news today that job markets, now this just goes to show you, sometimes you see these studies, that Fort Myers, Florida, Lee County, Florida, where I'm talking to you from right now, and adjacent to us, Collier County, Florida, Naples, are number 8 and number 10 in the top job markets in the country. Now, I don't know who came up with that, and I don't know how, I don't know what criteria they used for their search, but I have not seen anything so ridiculous in a long time that these two areas would be good job market. If you like washing dishes and cleaning hotel rooms, that maybe that's true. Other than that, forget it. Jobs are very scarce people are laying off like crazy, and yet they're talking about, I don't get it. Well, we are going to take a quick break here to get our guests lined up and all that, attend to that, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away. With the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. And as promised, right now we have Mr. John Talbot on the phone, author and economist. His latest book is Obamanomics, a very, very fine read. And it's an easy read, easy to digest, and I think you will all enjoy this book. Welcome to the program, John.
Well, thanks, Guy. Appreciate it.
It's had a chance to really go over this book, and I did enjoy it very much. I find that you and I, anyway, are very like-minded on it. How did you happen to choose to write a book about Obamanomics and come up with the name?
Well, I think I thought of a name first, but then I realized that this guy had very similar ideas to my own, and, I very much wanted him to be president, and I couldn't go out door to door, so I thought the best thing I could do was write a book. That's what I do for a living.
And your background over the years, as far as any political partisanship, where have you stood on that all over the years?
Well, it's funny you ask. It's a very good question because, the family's lifelong Democrats. So I was a lifelong Democrat, but with Bill Clinton, fell in love with the DLC. I just sort of lost a little interest, and I started looking around, and I realized that a third of the country is Democrat, a third of the country is Republican, and a third of the country is Independent. And back in 2000, I almost wanted somebody to run as an Independent, but it would have been frustrating because if he had won, he still would have had a Congress that was all Democrat and Republican.
Sure.
I guess I'm progressive by definition.
Well, I am as well, and we really advertise this show as liberal and democratic, so that's where I'm coming from all the time. And what makes you think that Obama has a strong plan as opposed to the yada, yada, yada we usually hear from the average politician, anything, I'll say anything and promise you anything to get your vote. Do you think Obama's engaged in that, or has he got a good, solid plan?
Yeah, it's funny because we all get information from television, right? And the smarter ones of us read books and read speeches and look at the internet, but it's amazing because even I didn't know until I went and started writing this book. I thought what he saw on television were the important issues of the day, and I was shocked to find out that when I dug, you know, deeper and read his books and read his speeches and read his policy statements, the media, the network media, wasn't reporting any of it. They were just reporting his middle name and his lapel pin, and it's sort of sad, right? It's sort of sad because you could almost divide the country up between those people that read and are critical thinkers and those people that just get their information from the news media.
Well, it's so true. The Britney Spears salacious news to many people is far more interesting than what Barack Obama is going to do for the economy. It's just not sexy at all.
Well, there is a silver lining in this cloud, and that is that Bill O'Reilly, he was hammering Democrats in 2000 and 2004, and it looks like he's just, like, lost on all these weird social issues now. So I don't know if he's going to come home and start hammering the election or not, but I hope he stays off in Bermuda or wherever.
Well, you've broken down and gone through the book. You've broken down Obama's positions very, very well. And by the way, I do want to mention to our audience, for those of you that have not read any of John's stuff, he is probably the best prognosticator that I can find anywhere who accurately down to the right on the money predicted this housing crash that we've got right now. What was the coming crash in the housing market? Was that it? And the name of the book?
In 2003, I wrote a book called The Coming Crash of the Housing Market. And I don't know how to say it politely, but I got a lot of grief from the media, from television, print media. And I sort of went with it, you know, because I saw it coming. Of course, it got worse before it got better. But in 2006, I got upset. And so in 2006, I came out with a book called Sell Now, the End of the Housing Bubble. And the first thing economists learn is never predict the direction. If you predict the direction, never, ever, ever predict timing. But, you know, I thought I had to, because I thought that it was just so crazy. I mean, the multiples of income, the multiples of rent, I mean, things were just absolutely crazy what the banks were willing to lend. So that book came out in February 2006, and I think that's about the peak, so I'm pretty proud of that.
Well, yeah, as you should be, because the reason I brought up your past writings was to lend to you the proper amount of credibility that you have on this Obamanomics book. You are the only one that I have read earlier on before this whole thing happened, the coming crash about the bubble, the housing bubble and all. You had it on the money, and I, as far as I'm concerned, you have more credibility than anybody does right now to talk about the economy, as certainly as much as anybody. So people would do well to go back and read those. It's kind of eerie. I hadn't read the coming crash in the housing market since right after it came out. And it's kind of eerie to go back and read it now. It makes one think that you have a crystal ball. So, very, very interesting.
It is a little eerie because I dedicated the entire chapter 9, to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yes.
And my readers never heard of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, right?
Right.
In 2003. Well, they've heard of them now.
And the ones that had heard of them, they trusted them explicitly and thought there was no chance whatsoever that there ever could be any difficulty with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It just couldn't happen, and yet you, once again, you had it exactly right.
What's sad about it, Guy, is that, you know, they pushed the saving of this bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac almost very quickly in 10 days, and everyone understands that they're so big they can't fail, but it doesn't mean a taxpayer has to write the check. There are $1.6 trillion of debt investors in those companies, and they're private companies. The CEOs, the CFO, were taking out hundreds of millions of dollars of compensation each year. And it's just so sad that if we gave a haircut of 5 or 10% to the debt investors, the taxpayers wouldn't have to step up. But you haven't heard that story anywhere. It's very sad.
Well, and once again, just one more time, they privatized the profits and we're socializing the losses here, and the people that should absorb some of the losses are not. And we're seeing that over and over again right now, and I hope there's an end to it someplace. And there has to be, doesn't there? We can't keep this up. And I'm off the subject a little bit. Well, with the FDIC, for example, more banks are going under. The FDIC certainly doesn't have enough money to cover losses if we get much deeper into this, do they?
No, their capital just got reduced by, I think, like 18-20% on one bank in California.
Mm-hmm.
Just one. And the predictions are there's hundreds coming, so...
And we've got millions.
Another bailout.
Yeah, we've got millions and millions of Americans thinking, well, that don't have anything over $100,000. Think, well, I'm safe. The FDIC is there. Hey, brother, I got news for you. If there are many more IndyMacs, you're not safe with the FDIC. I suppose the government would step in and print some more money, but then again, we're talking about inflation that completely out of control inflation. One way or another, the public's gonna pay the bill. Have you?
I can't wait to hear what the administration line is, the Republican line is, because they were all free market. Cheney was big free market competition. Let the weak sisters die out. And now, exactly what you said. On the upside, they allow enormous pay packages for the CEOs. The shareholders have made enormous amounts of money in all these banks, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. And on the downside, they run to hit the taxpayer. So it's unbelievable. But I guarantee you they're going to come up with some story that says it's a government problem, not a free market problem.
Well, if we let these companies flounder, we can't possibly get by. The whole nation will go down the tubes if we don't save them. So it's pay me now or pay me later. That's going to be their answer, I think. Print some more money. Oddly enough, my cousin was the treasurer of the United States and was involved in printing the money. But she did tell me, I just spoke to her last night, she said there is a limit to how much they can print, and they're probably at it right now.
No, but you're one of the few people that understands that. You know, most people think that if the government steps up and saves somebody for $100 billion or $200 billion, you know, that they're going to either borrow it or they're going to tax us, right? But there's this third alternative where they just turn on the printing presses.
Yeah.
And it's the explanation why in a recession, which we're going into a very bad recession, and you expect all commodity prices to decline, commodity prices are increasing.
Yeah.
And why? I think in real terms, they're declining, but you don't see it because the nominal price in dollars, because of all the printing of the money, is just absolutely escalating.
Sure, sure. And I heard something earlier today, a prediction, and I'm trying desperately to remember who told me this. I heard it on the news, actually, which makes it possibly true or not true, but as it said, the bottom of the housing market's not even visible yet. Do you concur with that?
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, everyone likes to believe their government is telling them the truth, and everyone likes to believe that their government is telling them, you know, the most serious problems in the economy. But this government is doing everything they can just to postpone this until January 2009. And they really aren't telling the truth. It's very sad. It's very sad because the facts are, and the New York Times just had a story today. They had a supposed expert telling you what was going to happen with housing. Well, the expert, their guest journalist, was a guy who wrote, you know, The Dummy's Guide to Mortgages, The Dummy's Guide to Housing. Well, he just gave the party line. He just said, oh, it's all, you know, roses and everything's going to be fine. It's not going to be fun. And I can't believe, if you go back to the 2003 book, it's so obvious that what's happened today, of course, the subprime and the people with, you know, lesser incomes are going to default first because they have less, you know, room, right? But the problem from 2000 all the way up to 2007 was not inner cities, not poor neighborhoods, not CRA loans. The problem was the most wealthy cities in America escalated 300-400%, and they're going to come down. And when they come down, it's not that these wealthy people have to default because they don't have other resources, but if they've got $1 million mortgage on $1 million house, and the house across the street is selling for $600,000, they're not going to keep paying the mortgage. And they call it jinglers because they literally put the keys in the mail and mail it off to the bank, and it jingles all the way home.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of that going on right now. I wonder, did you read the Wall Street Journal today?
I'm looking at it right now.
Did you see the article by Michael Boskin called Obamanomics is a Recipe for Recession?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
You need to read that one.
Is he on the editorial page?
Opinion. Yes, it's on the opinion page, and he's addressing this just flat out at you, and I don't think there's any question it's thrown at you. I didn't read the entire article, but I'm not sure if he mentions you in there. But that's where he's coming. But it's laughable because it's a great big long piece, and it says Obamanomics is a recipe for recession, and I had to laugh because. What, is this a different kind of recession than we're in now? Is this, what are you saying here, that we're not in a recession now? That only Obama's methods of economics is going to put us in a recession? You really, dig into that if you can. I think you'll enjoy that article.
When I say I read the Wall Street Journal, I read the articles in the Wall Street Journal. I never read the editorial.
Okay,
it's a completely separate group. And they are the most right-wing people. And I see the headlines every once in a while, but I refuse to read. It's nutty.
You in particular, though. You
on the reporting in the news from Wall Street is good, but you just have to skip over the editorial page.
Well, you need to check this one today. Since it's the Obamanomics title in there, I think you'd enjoy that article. It's a little bit off the mark. Have you in any way advised the Obama campaign? Do you give them any economic advice or just through the book?
No, I'm completely independent, which has its pluses and minuses. I mean, the good news is that I can say whatever I want. And if you read the book, you'll see that even though I like most of its positions, every once in a while, I have a, added addition that I think would help them even more. So, I've got some of my own thoughts in the book.
Yes.
I'm not affiliated with the campaign at all.
It does make it obvious in there that that you're not necessarily an Obamaphile. You just you like a lot of the things that he says and a lot of and agree with and do throw some extras in there. And I think that gives the book credibility.
He's sort of a funny guy because... the media is always criticized for liking the guy, but if you hang around the guy long enough and you listen to him and he's making sense and the opposition isn't making sense, what are you supposed to do, right? I mean, you're supposed to support the facts, right? So, they're in a difficult position. I hate the media where there's a fact and instead of reporting the fact, they report two sides of the fact and give it equal weighting in the article, so it sounds like there's a debate. There's not a lot of debate on this stuff.
No. Which brings me to the opposition to Obama, the McCain economic plan. Of course, with the recent illustration of Phil Graham, I think we kind of know where they stand. But are we truly looking at a continuance of the Bush economics with John McCain?
It's funny. It's because I wrote this book. I have to read all of his speeches, I have to read all the articles, I have to be current on it. I've never heard the term McCain economic plan. I don't know if it's an oxymoron or what, but it's unbelievable. I mean, they asked him about economics, and he said, it's not my strong point. I don't know much about it. This is the critical issue, and I was afraid Barack was not going to focus on it. He went off to Europe, which I think he had to do, but when he came back, he said, it's passé. Now we're only going to talk one issue, economics, because it's hurting America. It's hurting them everywhere.
It sure is, and as far as I can see, other than passing out more tax cuts for the wealthy, I can't find a McCain economic plan at all. I try to find it, but I honestly don't know what it is other than more tax cuts.
It's unbelievable, because I went on with Joe Scarborough last week, and he was very polite, because I think he realized there's a tide shifting. That the day before I showed up on his show, 200,000 Germans showed up for Barack Obama's speech. But, you know, even he was like a bit embarrassed that McCain didn't have much to offer. And what I said to him was, you know, you fool us once, fool us twice. Back in 2001, they did a very good PR job saying that if you do this huge tax cut to the wealthiest American, it would trickle down. And I don't know who fell for it. I didn't fall for it, but enough Americans fell for it that we reelected Bush. But now, looking back on the last 7-8 years, it's obvious it didn't work. And what Joe said, he said, well, yeah, but we had these 2% and 3% growth rates for 8 years. I said, the only reason you had the growth rates is because the government was borrowing, the government wasn't counting the war on their budget, and all the consumers in America were borrowing against their houses and buying boats and cars. Not only is that going to stop, but the banks have these huge losses they're not going to lend. The banks have $1.5-2 trillion of losses. You leverage that up at 15 to 1, which is what the banks typically leverage at. That means $15, $20, $22 trillion of no lending going forward. It's very scary.
And a lot of it's for business. A lot of lending is dried up for business, which means jobs. And it's just a nasty circle we're in right now. And I don't know what the answer is. Do you have an answer for how we're getting out of this?
Well, it's funny because I've thought about it a lot. But my answer comes from Obama. And it's kind of amazing, really, because I spent my career in finance. And yet Obama, I don't think of as a finance expert, but he went into Wall Street. He gave a speech in Cooper Union about 4 months ago.
And if I could interrupt you just for a second, you were with what, Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, I was with Goldman Sachs for 9 years.
You're no stranger to Wall Street.
No. But, you know, back then, 2-3 months ago, Hillary, McCain, they were all talking $10 billion stimulus packages. And I shook my head. I said, you've got to be kidding me. It's a $2, $3, and $4 trillion problem. $10 billion stimulus package ain't gonna cut it. And so it was kind of a test for me about how smart Obama was and who he was listening to. But he gave a speech, again, not reported anywhere, but it's on his website, at Cooper Union, where he said his audience was all Wall Street types. And he said, guys, the gig is up. You've been unregulated for 8 years. It's over. We're going to reintroduce regulation. And it's the right solution. But what I loved about it is Rush Limbaugh and others have turned regulation into a dirty word. But regulation is what's needed. You need the banks to have a minimal level of capital. You need mortgage brokers not to fraudulently change the income of people applying for a mortgage. You need regulation. So I was just shocked that he had the courage in front of a Wall Street audience to give that speech.
Oh, indeed. And you know, capitalism's great, but somebody has to sit on a little bit of it now and then, and when we've allowed it to go completely unfettered, and you're right, I completely agree. Some regulations absolutely necessary. We'll see if he gets away with it in the Congress if he gets elected, and I believe he will get elected.
I believe he'll get elected. But the key is, if he wins 51-49, I'm afraid he's got a difficult road to hoe.
Yeah.
I think he might be a landslide. I think he might carry 37, 38 states in the Electoral College. If he does that, it's going to be a Reagan revolution again. He's going to have all the Democrats, all the independents, and some progressive Republicans. And that's why I object to very, very progressive Democrats when they say, oh, he's moving to the middle. Well, of course he's moving to the middle. He doesn't need 30% of the people. You need 65% of the people, because you're exactly right. The congressmen are taking money from these lobbyists.
Sure.
So he needs the people behind them to make this work.
John, could you just take a moment and give our listeners a basic outline of what you mean about bottom-up economic prosperity?
You know, it's funny because Barack wrote two books, one kind of an autobiography and one about his policies, and they're both very illustrative. But the world changed since he wrote them. What happened is we went into a severe, severe financial crisis, and he's going to come out, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks and have a detailed plan for the financial crisis. But when he wrote his books, he was talking much bigger issues and much longer-term issues. And what he spoke about is all you have to do is contrast it with trickle-down economics. Trickle-down economics said, let's give a tax cut to the wealthiest 10% of Americans so that they have $1.5 trillion extra dollars. And what they pitched us on was they would then go start new businesses, they would invest, they would start, businesses around the world, around the country, and they would hire people and everything would work out fine. Well, it hasn't worked that way, right? I mean, what's happened through globalization is the wealthy have gotten wealthier, and the Wall Street Journal has a beautiful article just last week showing that the top 1% has gone from 10% of income to 22% of income. And they don't do the calculation, but it's even worse than that after tax because their tax rates have gone down. So if you understand globalization, it did make countries richer. But there's nobody, David Ricardo said that both countries would benefit from trade. He never said everybody in the country would benefit from trade. Yeah. What's happened is we've put our workers in competition with low-wage Vietnam, low-wage China, low-wage Mexico. And so they're worse off. They're worse off, and they haven't seen a real wage increase in 30 years. So Obama is very much a free trader, but he wants to introduce the things that should have been introduced from the beginning of our trade agreements. He wants environmental protections. He wants consumer protection against, you know, lead paint in our toys and concrete in our malaria pills, and he wants some level of worker protection. But, you know, I think globalization is with us for the long term, and what it points out to me is that America, and we knew America, our education system had declined. I mean, it declined from the number one most premier education system in the world to number 19 amongst, 31 developed countries. And when that happens, I mean, I think what it was like back in the 1800s, when America was coming up, and we were the, labor-intensive, resource-intensive country, and England was the, lawyers, bankers, etc. But England made sure they kept their people educated, and so they benefited from trade with America. But we have this problem that because of our education system going down, our workers are getting killed.
Yes, yes, it's so true. And I live in a state where the educational system is ranked usually 49th or 50th, and so ashamed of the way things go. John, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. Do you have a website that people can go to check out your books and so forth?
I do. It's www.john-talbot.com.
Don't forget the dash. And, of course, your book is available just about everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Borders, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, everywhere.
And it's called Obamanomics.
It's the number one book of our distributors, so it's doing well.
Yes, and the distributors, Seven Stories Press.
That's our publisher.
Your publisher.
Our distributor has about 50 publishers, and we're number one.
Excellent.
Number two is about 75% behind us, and we haven't even started the media push, so it's good news.
Great, and it'll keep you interested, folks. It really will keep you interested, and there are many good ideas in here, many explanations, and kind of leaves you a good roadmap of where we're at and how we got here and maybe how we can get out of it. John, thanks so much for being on the program today. We appreciate it greatly, and continued success to you, and perhaps we can have you back again some of these days.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much. John Talbot, Obamanomics. How Bottom-Up Economic Prosperity Will Replace Trickle-Down Economics really is a good read, and I had a chance to look it over good in airports the past. Oh, man. You talk about a nightmare. You talk about a nightmare for airports here lately. Let's see here. We got a caller coming in. I was going to take a break, but I think we'll go ahead and take this call. Let's see here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Kevin.
Your timing was impeccable. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
For the book, I can hardly put it down. I'm almost finished.
Oh, good. You got the book. All right. Yeah, we sent that out last week. You got
great
it ready.
Great book.
Good.
What I want to say is, and this time I'm going to appeal to a lot of these conservatives, especially the money-making lot. That article, I happen to look at it also in the journal. And this is the deterioration of probably the one conservative source of news that did not insult my intelligence.
Yeah, well, it's bound to happen sooner or later.
Okay, this is what happened when Fox takes over two newspapers now.
Yeah.
Okay, one for the proletariat, one for the, elite.
That's right.
God knows how many radio stations.
That's right. That's
and exactly God right. knows how many cable stations and major news network.
That's how it works. So slow but sure, an infestation of the media that'll get them where they want to go. And they're
the thing is, and this is classic Marxist, giving you the rope to hang yourself.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, who's going to buy your garbage when nobody has money to purchase?
And we're taking the rope. We are taking the rope. We're standing there asking for it in many cases.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where it's going to end. I keep hoping that John Talbot just mentioned about education. I keep hoping the American public will get educated a little bit better. I think.
Well, the thing is, there's been such a blatant disregard for, on every level, whether it be the powers that be, even the students themselves, that they don't respect education.
Right.
And I, for one, who, does substitute teach on the side, tell you, there's a blatant disrespect. People rather be entertained than educated.
That's right.
The reality is, if you're not educated, you can't afford to be entertained.
So true. So true. I see it all the time, and I see the standards for education. Down the tubes. I happened to talk to a student just the other day about that they're a junior in high school, and I was appalled, just appalled at the the level that they're at, which is nowhere. Just pass them, get them out, and that's all that matters.
Okay, I've been pressured by administrators when I was teaching. Do that.
Just get them through here. All we want are the numbers.
Dollars to bring into the school.
Yeah, we can say they graduated. We don't care how they graduated. Just get them out of here. And yeah, more dollars.
So you see, ignorant people make good cannon fodder. If you saw that special on HBO last night about recruiting.
Yeah, and more dollars. Most of the school systems are top heavy with administration money, and the teachers aren't getting paid enough. So that's where it comes from. And once again, follow the money. Oh, jeez, I don't know.
Yeah, because if did you see it, that documentary?
No, I did read an article about it. Didn't get to see it. I don't have the luxury of HBO.
Oh
no.
But there was one. Recruit who was like, she doesn't like it in the Army because she wants to learn other things like fine arts and all that. I'm like, you joined the Army for Christ's sake. You're not going to learn.
Yeah, that's
the finer arts in the Army.
But
some recruiting officer probably told her a whole.
I my very best friend in high school, and he wouldn't mind me telling the story. It's been like that. Since I don't know when, my very best friend in high school got out of school and joined the Navy. And they promised him that after his 4 years were up, they came to him and they offered him a bonus. And they said, if you will re-up, we're going to send you to nuclear power school. at Bainbridge, Maryland, and you'll be on a nuclear sub. And just imagine when you get out of the service, just imagine what that nuke school technology will be worth. So he re-upped. He had enough money to buy a new TV set out of his bonus and all that. He re-upped for 4 more years. And 4 years, went to nuke school, spent the rest of the time on a nuclear sub underwater, back and forth between here and Scotland. Uh-huh. And when he got out of school, that nuclear power technology schooling that he took in a civilian life was worth absolutely nothing. Nothing. It was good for military application only, and there wasn't anybody that was interested in hiring him. So the military's done that for a long time. I'm afraid oversold some of the benefits. Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Oh, Kevin, thanks for calling today. Good to hear from you, as always.
Okay, and thanks again for that book.
You're very welcome. We'll be giving books away from time to time, and who knows, maybe you'll get another one. Thanks.
Well, don't spread the wealth around.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, we're going to start doing that. We get so many books from publishers. The problem is the shipping on them. Shipping, we get the books free, really. Well, not, we do get the books free from publishers. They're willing to send out many, many copies of books, and I enjoy getting them, and I enjoy reading them, and I read most of them. Most of them. Love to read. Anyway, it's time for a break here in the Guy James Show. You've heard me ramble on for a moment or two, so let's do take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes or two.
Super trooper, things are gonna blind me, but I won't feel blue, like I always do, cause somewhere in the crowd there's you. Wishing every show was free.
Trooper by ABBA. I love ABBA. Yes, I do. Always have. And have you ever seen a new a movie advertised more than their latest one, Mamma Mia? Actually, it's not an, not an ABBA movie, but the ABBA music is in it. Really, they've advertised it quite a lot. And from what I understand, it's pretty doggone good. Anyway, I just got an amazing email just a moment ago of the utmost importance. It's earth-shattering news, I believe. I can't tell you how important it is, and it's breaking right here, right now on this show. Marty, thank you so much for sending this. I don't know what we would have done had we not known this information on this show. That's how important it is. Did you know, folks, that this is from the Internet Movie Database. Did you know that John Voight, Angelina Jolie's actor father, John Voight, has written a scathing review of U.S. presidential hopeful Barack Obama's campaign tactics, branding the senator a man who falls short in every way? Remember this, folks. These are the words from John Voight. John Voight! Calling Obama a man who falls short in every way. The 69-year-old veteran penned a critique of the popular politician in a piece for the Washington Times entitled My Concerns for America, which was printed on Monday. John Voight, for God's sake. Listen to him, people. Voight slams the Democratic Party in the piece, accusing them of using a propaganda campaign in their bid to get Obama into the White House. And Voight, now this is especially important, and Voight warns voters that America will become a socialist nation if Obama secures power, insisting the U.S. will become weakened if he wins the November election. In the article, Voight writes, the Democrats have targeted young people, knowing how easy it is to bring forth whatever is needed to program their minds. And he says Obama has grown up with the teaching of very angry, militant white and black people who will gain power for their need to demoralize this country and help create a socialist America. Folks, I wouldn't take this seriously if this is from anybody else, but if it's from John Voight. He says, if God forbid we live to see Obama president, we will live through a socialist era that America has not seen before, and our country will be weakened in every way. Oh, I cannot tell you how demoralized I am, knowing that John Voight has these sad words to say about Barack Obama. This is John Voight. He was in that movie about the river down in Georgia with those guys. I can't think the name of it right now. That was pretty good. I think he was in that. I'm going to ask the studio and audience, what was the name of that movie that John Voight was in, had to do with the hillbillies down in Georgia and the river, and, you know, they wrote a banjo song about it. Deliverance. Yes, the studio audience knew that. Deliverance. So, I don't know of another big movie John Voight was in. I don't know, but he's one important guy. Wow. It breaks my heart to read something like this, that John Voight has those feelings. Yes. Socialist. Remember that John Voight said it. When you've all got your uniforms on, your socialist uniforms, and we're all out with our scythes in the wheat fields some of these days. And our socialists doing our socialist jobs, and remember that John Voight warned us. Got a couple callers on the line, and you know, to be fair to you, I really don't have time to take any callers the rest of the show. We only got just a couple of minutes, and I'd be shortchanging if I took any calls. So call us back tomorrow, okay? I did want to make mention that one of my very favorite senators. You know, I love both of them from Oklahoma so much, and Imhoff, the fool, and I've mentioned very often one of my other favorite senators is Ted Stevens from Alaska. 40 years the man's been in the United States Senate. He's running for election again this year. And I have no reason to believe that even though he's indicted, that the good people of Alaska will probably return him to office. Corruption in Alaskan politics is their congressman Don Young. You know the story about him here in South Florida coming down to raise money from friends who wanted to put an interchange in on U.S. Route 75, Interstate 75. The friends just happened to own the land around where the interchange was to be, and Don Young just happened to come here and solicit donations from these folks. But Ted Stevens, the longest-serving Republican senator, indicted on 7 counts. And although they mentioned the quid pro quos that he received during this whole mess, he didn't get indicted for those. I don't understand. They just indicting him for lying about it. It's like robbing a bank and catching you. They're not going to indict you for robbing the bank. They're going to indict you that when they ask you if you robbed the bank, you said no. They're going to indict you for that, but they're not going to indict you for holding the gun to the teller's head and taking the money. That's the same thing we have going here. But my congratulations to Ted Stevens. I knew you could do it, Ted. I knew you could do it. And couldn't you just tell the Justice Department out there talking about it today? You could just tell they had to bring the indictment. They had to. The evidence is so overwhelming against Ted Stevens. I mean, so overwhelming that you could put a class full of second graders in there. They could listen to the evidence, and they would convict this man. And I know he will get convicted. But as they put it in the press today, he's 84 years old, and surely they won't do anything to him. And of course, as far as arresting him, they said, well, we're going to arrange that so that it's convenient to everybody. Now, if it were you, my listeners, if it were me, we'd get hauled out of wherever we are at the moment in handcuffs and paraded in front of the cameras. But they're going to arrange it so that it's convenient for Mr. Stevens to give himself up. Yes, they're not actually going to go out and arrest him. So it is nice to know that our law enforcement system can be kind and benevolent to one of their own. And another question I have is, why is that weasel, candy-ass Lindsey Graham shadowing John McCain every moment of the day, no matter where he goes? Is he getting a free vacation from his Senate duties at taxpayers' expense, too? Is he? Man, hey, every place he is, you got Lindsey, and I just can't stand Lindsey Graham. Can't stand him. Can't stand him. And there he is standing behind John McCain. My God, I would think John McCain would get somebody with a little more credibility than that standing around him. Woo. And Charles Krauthammer. I don't know how many of you know who Charles is. He's the commentator on Fox News that thinks he knows everything in the whole wide world. When commenting with Britt Hume and others on the Fox News the other night, Krauthammer said that Brock's speech in Germany kind of reminded him of, you know, talking in front of 200,000 Germans, getting adoration from 200,000 Germans. He was likening Obama to the Nazis, to Adolf Hitler. And I thought that was just a nice comment by Krauthammer, son of a bitch that he is. Can't stand the man. Well, I've got a long list of can't stand yous here today. I guess tomorrow. Well, as long as I'm talking about can't stand yous, how about that Dana Perino? Have you seen her lately at the mic? Have you ever noticed how totally out of her league she is? I mean, she isn't even a decent liar like Tony Snow was. I mean, granted, Scotty McClellan wasn't a good liar either, but Perino is really the worst liar I've seen yet in the White House, and we've seen a lot of them. But she is really, really pathetic. I don't know how she's